webcasting around the world from the desert metropolis of Phoenix, Arizona, this is The Dividing Line. The Apostle Peter commanded Christians to be ready to give a defense for the hope that is within us, yet to give that answer with gentleness and reverence. Our host is Dr. James White, Director of Alpha and Omega Ministries and an elder at the Phoenix Reformed Baptist Church. This is a live program, and we invite your participation. If you'd like to talk with Dr. White, call now at 602-973-4602 or toll free across the United States. It's 1-877-753-3341. And now with today's topic, here is James White.
Welcome to The Dividing Line on a Tuesday morning. In the book of Romans, chapter 12, we read words that are very familiar to us, and do not be conformed to this world. It's literally this age, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. Now, very often, people today are unaware of the impact of different languages upon our own language and the terminology that we use today. In the Latin Vulgate, in Romans chapter 12, now those of you who just had an involuntary shiver go up your spine, please realize that the Latin Vulgate was the standard biblical translation for 1100 years, basically. And hence, much of theology is deeply impacted, at least in the West, obviously, by the Latin Vulgate, both in its accuracies and inaccuracies. And in Romans 12:2, when it says, do not be conformed to this age, it's seculo. And that, of course, is the foundation, the word from which we derive in English the term secular. This age, this world. It is also used in another very important text in the New Testament, in the Latin translation, anyways. Actually, there's a number of them. 1 Corinthians 1:20. Where is the wise man? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this seculi, this age, this world? And so when you talk about the 1 Corinthians 2:6, yet we do speak wisdom among those who are mature. A wisdom, however, not of this age, seculi, nor of the principum huius seculi, the rulers of this age. So that particular use lies behind our term secular, and hence secularism. And the secular, as it developed, especially during the medieval period, was placed over against the sacred. And the sacred is that which has spiritual value and eternal value over against the secular, which has to do with this world and temporality. Temporality, the idea of something that is passing away that does not have necessarily eternal consequences. Why do I mention any of this and give you the background of this? Because we truly find ourselves in a battle in Western culture today against the forces of secularism. And the secularism that is manifesting itself in post-Christian Europe and post-Christian Western societies outside of Europe, such as Canada, the United States, and Australia, and New Zealand. I'll give New Zealand their own little shot out there. That post-Christian secularism is not a neutral thing. One of the greatest myths that we must challenge as believers is the myth of secular neutrality. From the Christian perspective, it should be obvious to us, but again, one of the great failures of the vast majority of even sound churches today is that we do not purposefully regularly challenge the myths, legends, and falsehoods that are being poured into the minds of the sheep, of the flock, every single day of their lives, unless they happen to live in a lead mine someplace. The lies of secularism are being poured into their minds, and if we allow them to sit there long enough, it's like when you get a cut, you need to deal with it immediately. If you don't deal with it, if you allow it to get infected, it just gets worse and worse. And one of our greatest failures is that we do not challenge these myths, and they become foundational to the way people think, and then we wonder why so many walk away from the faith, or so many adopt odd, strange views of the faith, where they don't seem to see how the lordship of Christ has ramifications for how you live your life in the rest of society. How you view law, how you view morality, how you view ethics, how you view justice, truth, meaning. And it's because we allow this myth to continue to exist. There is no such thing, there can be no such thing, as neutrality in regards to the claims of Jesus Christ. You either reject them or you embrace them. And that is one of the... So many people, even inside the church today, go, no. I won't go there. That's too radical for me. That's too radical for me. I want to be able to talk about Jesus, and I want to say that I choose to follow Jesus, but I don't want to say that his lordship is actually relevant to anybody else, especially not to all my gay friends or to my friends who want to promote abortion and things like this. I want to have friendship with these folks. I want to hold it all together. You're forcing me to make a choice. And yet, is that not exactly what the early church faced in having to make a choice? A choice very often between life and death. But a choice especially between friendship with God and friendship with the world. And in that context of persecution, in that context of fully knowing what it meant, that's where you encounter James 4:4. Do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? This is a fundamental concept. And so secularism in the West today, because it is post-Christian, will respond to that out of which it has been birthed. Think about it on a theological level. Think about the emergent church today. Why is the emergent church so opposed to conservative theological principles and beliefs? It's because most of these people are coming out of a form of fundamentalism. And when you come out of something, man, I've seen it. I know as an elder in a church, I get very, very nervous when someone comes into our fellowship from another fellowship, and all they want to talk about is how bad the other fellowship was. That makes me nervous. Maybe it was, but you know what? Part of Christian maturity is when you walk away from that, you don't let it define you. And you don't let it define the new relationship to the church you believe the Lord has led you to either. And yet that's a natural human tendency. When you come out of something, you react against it, and you allow it, in essence, to negatively form your new perspectives. Well, when unregenerate men and women throw off the yoke of what used to be Christian Europe, what's going to happen? Well, look at the Netherlands. You want a great example of what happens when you have, and I've spoken about this before, but I have to talk directly to my Reformed brothers and sisters here. When you don't see the absolute necessity of the grace of God in regeneration, and you think that's something that basically happens because you do the right ordinances or sacraments or something, you create a system where, well, look at the Netherlands today. I mean, they are so far ahead of us. And the whole concept of transcendent meaning and beauty, it's lost there. It's gone. You still have humanity living there, but it's been dehumanized. And you have this massive reaction. You throw off the chains of religion. You throw off the, and you throw everything out that goes with it, including transcendent meaning, the fact that we are the creatures of God. Therefore, all the things that are associated with that, the beauty of creation and music and art and all the things that come from that, all of that is associated with what we believe about ourselves. And once you start believing that you are a mere accident, that you are a brief blip in an impersonal universe, no transcendent meaning, no direction, nothing you do in this life is really going to have any type of eternal impact whatsoever, well, it truly impacts the culture and how you behave within it. And this form of secularism is showing itself to become totalitarian in its nature. And when I say totalitarian, I mean it is a, secularism is a worldview. Secularism is a worldview. And it is being promoted by your tax dollars. It is, has become the dogmatic religious perspective of the elite in Western culture, and hence is becoming the dogmatic perspective of the governments as well. And it is an anti-Christian worldview. It cannot be neutral to Christianity. It will not be neutral to Christianity. And anyone who looks at what's happening in the European Union knows that it is not neutral to Christianity, and it cannot brook open, free expression of religious speech and viewpoints. It can't. Totalitarianism is always a system that controls all of society, including the thought, the mind, the expression of dissenting viewpoints, and suppresses them. I was talking with my kids on Father's Day, and I asked, did you guys read 1984 when you were in school? No. Really? We did. I read it before 1984, before the actual date, that is. But no, that was not one of the assigned books. And many people today, they don't know what Newspeak is. We were warned about exactly what is happening in our society and in our culture today long, long ago. And this is why people today, and I said something last night on Twitter, and just watching the secularist responses, I'm not sure why these secularists follow me, but they do, and watching the secular response and their complete disconnection, the fact that these folks have been taught what to think, not how to think. They cannot see the inconsistencies in their own thought. And so, well, you know, it's good to protect people. You mean by taking other people's rights away? What about those folks? They don't see that by taking the position they're taking, they are showing themselves to be inconsistent. And they're showing themselves to be willing to basically be controlled by Big Brother. Yeah, that's where it came from, 1984. Big Brother. Big Brother's watching you. And Big Brother wants to control what you say, how you say it, the words you use. And that's what Newspeak was all about. Newspeak was all about destroying words. Destroying words that could be used to express viewpoints and perspectives that the government determines, well, shouldn't be expressed. They're not good for society. And that is where Western society is heading once again. You hear the calls for censorship. You hear the calls for, you put the UN in control of the internet and it's all over with, folks. It's all over with. I mean, it's not like they're going to be consistent in the application of these things, but the fact of the matter is, the internet is one of the greatest dangers to totalitarian states. Look at what happens. Look at what happened during the quote unquote Arab Spring, which has turned into the Arab Deep Winter, especially with the victory of the Islamic Brotherhood in Egypt. And not that we didn't see that coming, but there are a lot of people say, "Oh no, that's never going to happen." Well, there it is. But what's the first thing that these places do? They want to shut down Twitter. They want to shut down access to the internet, so there can't be communications. The world can't know what's actually going on. And they know that it's by means of that open flow of communication that the very thoughts that the state doesn't want, well, that's what's coming our direction. And you just need to understand, secularism cannot be neutral regarding the teachings of Jesus Christ. It must suppress them. It must either alter them, dilute them, or suppress them in toto. It has to. And we already see that happening. And it's going to happen more and more. And we need to be aware of it. If you have not read Michael Brown's A Queer Thing Happened to America, I'm telling you, skip a trip to the fast food place and pick it up. It's available on Kindle. It's available in hard copy. You need to read it. Read Alan Sears, The Homosexual Agenda. Read these books. Recognize what's going on. And then parents, turn off that stinking television. And gather those kids around the table and talk about the faith and what it means to them and what it means to you. Help them to understand what a Christian worldview is and why they should value it and why they should recognize attacks upon it. They are the ones that people, they're the ones that the secular state wants. They want to control your children. And it is amazing how little legal foundation, even here in the United States, parents have to protect their own children from being indoctrinated by the state. European countries are already banning homeschooling. You must send your children to the state. You must support what the state teaches. It is totalitarianism. It is here. We just noted last night that in Quebec, they've set up a government-sponsored tip line. It's 1984 all over again. You are supposed to spy on your neighbors. And if you see or hear any homophobic statements or activities, you are to report to the government. It is 1984. It is here. So, while we still have the opportunity, we speak out. And right around the same time as I saw the Quebec thing, I was sent a link. I had to go searching for it. It used to be many, many decades ago that you would form your moral and ethical conclusions based upon lengthy conversation, being deeply challenged, really thinking things through. Not anymore. Now, one of the saddest things about the young generation today, they don't get their news by reading things. They get their news from comedy shows. Yeah, from comedy shows. That's where they get their news from. And they are far more impacted by a blog article that's primarily pictures and drawings than they are by any clearly argued, documented presentation, book, or anything else, because that's too long. On the one hand, they will very easily look down upon preceding generations as not being as advanced as they are, knowing as much as they are. But the reality is, it is the next generation is 10 miles wide and a quarter of an inch deep. They're never challenged. In fact, they consider it to be offensive to be challenged. And when you do challenge them, the result is an emotional explosion, which is pretty much what you get with little children. There is a massive amount of immaturity in the thought of Western culture as a whole, but especially the next generation. And they're the ones who are going to be allowing our liberties and our freedoms to be lost, to be done away with. So there is an article, 14 Steps That Will Evolve Your Views on Gay Marriage. Attention, people who don't like gay people, read this, by Matt Stoppera, who looks like he's about 22. Step number one, blame yourself. And then there's a picture of one of those, you know how you have chalkboards outside of restaurants, you know, in a lot of the big cities, and you draw, you put the, you know, today's specials and stuff like that. Well, here's a chalkboard outside of a something. It says, if you don't like gay marriage, blame straight people. They're the ones who keep having gay babies. Now, why does that have any impact upon someone's thought? Why would anyone find that? Let's face it, a lot of the younger generation walks by, sees that, and goes, wow, man. And it's because if you've never been taught and you've never had it modeled for you to think past the surface level and to examine the presuppositions, to examine what's not stated but what's there, then it's short. It could probably fit in a tweet. And that's what's important, is it's got to be tweet length. Two things. First assumption is that you have gay babies. No such thing. We've not found a gay gene. Even if we found one, I love to ask people like this. Let me ask you something. In fact, I asked someone this morning and they blew up in Twitter. I mean, it's just sort of like that bird in Shrek that kept trying to get higher and higher, singing with the princess, and it just poof, that's leaves the two little legs sitting on the branch. That's what people do on Twitter. You can just tell as soon as you challenge these sub 30-year-old folks to actually engage a little bit more of the gray matter, poof, that's what you get, is two little feet left on the branch and nothing more. But anyway. I asked this person, let me ask you, if we did find a gay gene, would you be for allowing us to in vitro treat the condition and change it before birth? Now think about the position that puts the gay advocate in. Because now homosexuality is a genetic whoops. It's a genetic mistake. And if you can change it and fix it, then why not? But you see, they want us to view homosexuality as having equal validity not only in the eyes of the law, but in the eyes of God and the eyes of society with heterosexuality. In fact, their homosexuals are called a gift of God, so they would be virulently opposed to treatment of the quote-unquote gay gene, if it were ever to be found. Because they know it's not a genetic thing. They're following their desires.
How many of the people that would take this position would be pro-abortion? What if we just decide, oh, the child has that gene, let's abort the child.
Yeah. It's something I like to ask. But there's also something else in this statement. If you don't like gay marriage, blame straight people. They're the ones who keep having gay babies. Of course, all of this, the drumbeat of the society has been to stop the recognition on the part of any rational person. What we're really talking about here is absolutely redefining marriage. Redefining marriage. And by doing so, destroying marriage. That's going to be a major part of this entire argument, is that, hey, it doesn't do anything to your marriage, the less married. Yes, it does. Look at Europe. Marriage, heterosexual marriage as an institution, has been ravaged in every nation where homosexual marriage has come into play. It's been ravaged. Going in the tank. Why? Because once you define marriage as just a relationship between two people, then you extend it to everybody, not just to homosexuals. But sometimes there's just people who live in the same place. It's, hey, we can get some breaks here. And so what you've got these secular unions. And it's just a contract. And you can get out of it in 180 days or 90 days just by giving written notice. That's all these relationships have become. It's just, it's no more than, oh, I bank at a certain place. I have a relationship with this certain person. Society doesn't look at it as till death do you part. There's no bedrock of fidelity. Terms like faithfulness and adultery, utterly irrelevant in those societies any longer. Irrelevant, even though those folks are still made in the image of God, and they are still hurt by unfaithfulness, even if their society doesn't even recognize it anymore. But there's something else in this statement. I've only gotten to the first of the 14 steps. Yes, straight people are the ones who have babies. They're not gay babies. They're the only ones who have babies. Gay people don't have babies. They steal our babies. They abuse our babies. But they can't have babies. You can do an artificial insemination. You can do unnatural things, but you can't have babies. Two men can't have babies. Two women can't have babies. So the entire statement is so utterly absurd on every level that you really wonder how someone who can make it can function in a normal society. But this isn't a normal society. And, of course, I bet they don't use this kind of irrational thinking when walking down the street or anything else. secular humanist in Twitter. Of course, he's got some kind of blasphemous picture of Jesus as his, that makes sense. That's incredibly ignorant of you to say, as a secular humanist, I want people to practice whatever faith they choose. No, sir, don't lie to me. Don't lie to me. You're lying to me, and I know you're lying to me. See, all I have to do is I have to look at what you folks are doing. You are seeking to suppress my freedom of speech. You're seeking to suppress my freedom to practice my faith. You're pushing for laws that would make it hateful to even say what my faith demands that I say. Don't lie to me, man. We've outed you folks. We know what you're up to. Don't try to hide behind that stuff. You want me to be free to practice my religion in my church only or in my home only, but not when it impacts my children when they go out into the world, but not out in the public. Don't lie to me. We know where you're coming from. So that's just the first step. Step number two. Realize gay marriage is inevitable. Statistics show people's views are rapidly changing on the issue. And then there's a graphic of public polls since 1988 regarding favorable and opposition, and they're pretty much even Steven now. Well, there's a brilliant way of thinking. Think about that. Look, again, the younger generation goes, well, you know, we don't want to be left behind. That's going to be the next thing is, you don't want to be on the bad side of history, you know. In fact, the very next one is going to be, imagine how stupid you'll look in 40 years. And it's got stand up for marriage, and then right below it, it's got pictures from back in the 50s. A bunch of white people say, stop mixing the races. So once again, it commits the same fallacy of connecting your sexual behavior and choices with race, which is not only incredibly ridiculous on every level, but it's incredibly offensive as well. But it is exactly what the homosexual agenda is all about. But the fact of the matter is, here's this poll, these trends. And what's the assumption? What's the assumption? The assumption is that wherever the society is going is what is good, and that's what you want to believe in. What if the society is accelerating rapidly toward a cliff that if you knew anything about history, and the next generation doesn't seem to care about history, if you knew anything about history, you would know that it's these very kinds of destructive behaviors that have destroyed society after society and nation after nation before us. And so, what if you want to be at the back of the bus that is accelerating toward the cliff? What if you want to be stomping on the brakes? What if you want to be calling for this society to come to its senses and turn from its self-destructive ways? I want the poll to show very, very clearly that I was not a part of the destruction of the society. I want my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren to be able to say, Grandpa, what were you doing? And I'll be able to tell them. I stood for what was right. I stood for what was true. I tried my best to make sure that you would be able to live in a world where you would still have freedom because your society was not intent upon self-destruction. That's what I want to be able to say. Then, as I said, you have the imagine how stupid you'll look in 40 years stuff. And then you have profanity, which, of course, is always a part of these things. Some guy named Louis C.K. He says, it doesn't have any effect on your life. What do you care? People try to talk about like it's a social issue. Like when you see someone stand up on a talk show and say, how am I supposed to explain to my child that two men are getting married? I don't know. It's your bleepy kid. You bleeping tell him. Why is that anyone else's problem? Two guys are in love, but they can't get married because you don't want to talk to your ugly child for bleeping 5 minutes. Well, as I've always said, profanity is for those who lack the intelligence to express themselves by any other means. But that really shows definitely here that Louis C.K., whoever he is, not only lacks the intelligence to express himself, but he really isn't bright. He's stupid. Intellectually, he's not playing with a full deck. You know why? Because anyone who can say that has not even slightly considered the impact of what we're seeing in Western culture, in European nations, in regards to the institution of marriage as a result of its redefinition. Or they know about it and they're just too incredibly dishonest to be honest about it. But it's the fact. And I know there's all sorts of, it doesn't have anything to do with you. Yes, it does. People try to talk about it like it's a social issue. What else is it? It's not a mathematical issue. Well, I guess it is. 1 + 1 always equals 0. But of course it's a social issue. It's about what kind of society we're going to have and what kind of behavior we are going to honor and foster in our society. And the founders of this nation, a nation that has twice saved the world from despotism, a nation that created the most powerful economy on the planet, that expanded education like no other nation ever had, that nation was founded by men, and not a single one of them ever even pondered such a thing as gay marriage. They recognized that our form of government had to be dependent upon an external framework of morality and ethics, or it would collapse. They recognized that. This is a revolution. And these people are the revolutionaries. Step 5, let go of the idea that same-sex marriage is ruining the sanctity of marriage argument. And then there's a tweet from George Takei. Kim Kardashian files for divorce after 72 days. Another example of how same-sex marriage is destroying the sanctity of the very institution. Now, we all know George Takei is gay. Here they've got a point. To a point. And that is, if the society had remained faithful to its founding and faithful to a recognition of the centrality of marriage to the society, the centrality of the family, of a father and a mother, the sanctity of their relationship, and had honored that, there wouldn't be any room for this wild-eyed desire to redefine marriage literally out of existence. But that's what happened. That is not an excuse, however, for then taking the society's wrong-headed disengagement from and disrespect for marriage as a grounds for everything else that's going to come from this. And don't for a second think that once gay marriage is here, that that's going to be it. Polyamory, polygamy, will of necessity follow after by the exact same arguments. Likewise, intergenerational love, intergenerational intimacy, currently called pedophilia, is at the same point in the psychiatric and psychological community right now that homosexuality was at the beginning of the 1970s. The articles are being written, the studies are being done, and guess where a lot of them are coming from? The Netherlands, saying that some of the greatest treatments for young people who are rebels against the culture, criminals, involves intergenerational intimacy. And once those studies start getting published over there, then they start getting cited over here in the psychiatric literature. And it won't take as long. It won't take as long until we're facing the Hollywood-endorsed, mainstream media-promoted abandonment of prohibition against pedophilia. It's going to happen. Unless the society collapses, God's judgment comes and destroys the thing, by necessity, it will happen. Read chapters 6 and 7 and 8. 6 and 7, I think. Might be 8. of Michael Brown's book. He goes through gut-wrenching clarity and citation of the information. It's there. Step six, take a closer look at the Bible. Well, we've got some guy staying there with a sign. Leviticus also said no haircuts, but I guess we are skipping that one. Well, we've also knocked that one so far out of the park that I doubt anyone would even try to rehabilitate it. And, of course, you got a guy with a sign that says, as Jesus said about gay people, then it's got quotes around nothing. And, of course, we have demonstrated that that is sheer and utter ignorance. And we won't repeat all of that, even though we may be getting back to Harry Knox here and have to deal with that. Then step seven, read their story and watch their video. Try not to cry. And so what you do is you have old gay guys when one gets Alzheimer's. And so you start the violins and you start pulling at the heartstrings. And you don't do anything whatsoever about dealing with the disease. Because we can't talk about that, you see. You can't talk about what everybody... In fact, I'd get your gun out if I were you. I'm just talking to somebody over there. None of you have any idea why I said that. But we have a studio audience, and I think that in current situation, knives or firearms would be an appropriate response to... Yeah, okay, good. All right. That's good to know. Oh, my. The studio audience sometimes does get out of control. You can't talk about what every person in an emergency room in San Francisco already knows. You can't talk about those things. Some of those things are so shocking and so, quite honestly, disgusting that we can't talk about them in almost any context at all. And that's the problem. It remains in the dark. It remains quiet. People don't know. Because most people are never going to attend a gay pride parade. They're not going to attend some of the public examples of utter debauchery, which, of course, we're told, well, those don't really represent homosexuality. Really? The numbers of the studies show that the vast majority of homosexual males especially have dozens, in fact, hundreds of sex partners in their lives. And the kinds of diseases, when I was reading the Dan Savage stuff, I followed a link on one of his things to this lengthy discussion. In fact, someone sent it to me, now that I think about it. Lengthy discussion. I think it was one of the publications that Dan Savage was writing for. And you might want to make sure the kids aren't in the room if you don't want them hearing this. Don't want to have to explain it. But it was a lengthy, multi-part discussion of what it's like as a gay man living the gay scene, having multiple partners, going out to gay bars and doing the gay thing. And having to deal with the fact that you don't have a large colon anymore. Because of it was diseased. It had to be taken out. And so you've got a colostomy bag. And the whole thing was, how do you deal with that once you take your clothes off? And there was all sorts of stuff about, all the stuff that goes with that, and it's really, really, really disgusting. But it is the result of the abuse of the human body. There are certain parts of the human body that are designed for one thing, and they work well at that. But they weren't designed to be something else. And when you abuse that, the results are devastating. But you can't talk about that. It's those anti-Christian bigots. They're the problem. They're the problem. Not what we're doing. No. Then, step eight. Take a look at the people in your own life. How many couples do you know that have stayed together as long as these couples? And they've got these pictures of all these gay couples. Of course, one of them is, Maureen and Cindy have been together for 37 years. They live in New Jersey with their two children. They cannot get married. They didn't have those children. They might have been artificially inseminated. They may have adopted. But they did not produce these children. That is a part of reality, folks. And they've got all these pictures. And then imagine their wedding. And see, look how happy these people are. I've seen a lot of pictures of happy people at weddings. But let's put some pictures up of happy 60-year-olds with 10-year-olds, shall we? It's the same stinking argument. And let's put some happy pictures of people up with their doggies and their kitties. Because it's the same stinking argument. Let's put some happy pictures up of daddy and little girl, or daddy and little boy. Because it's the same stinking argument. Pictures are not arguments. And then they've got a picture of a soldier kissing his lover and wrapped around him. That's just great. And then step 11, ask yourself, you could say no to these kids. And here's this little kid with the song, Let My Moms Get Married. And then ask yourself, you could say no to Neil Patrick Harris. Yes, I could say no. Pretty easy. Look at the consequences, step 13, consequences of gay marriage. And they've got a big red circle, and next to it is the key to colors. And red is gays marry, and then you've got blue, Russia invades, green, judgment day begins, yellow, families are destroyed, and purple, ice caps melt. But it's all just red, gays marriage. And in other words, it's a repetition of what was said before, that there is no impact upon marriage. That is a lie. That is a documentable lie. So this agenda is based upon the ignorance of people who can be impacted by a series of pictures on a blog. And then step number 14, imagine the alternatives. You got a gay guy with a sign that says, would you rather I marry your daughter? Followed by, congratulations, you've evolved, next to a picture of a chimp. There's the argument. 14 steps that will evolve your views on gay marriage. And that's the kind of thing that the next generation actually embraces and goes, yeah, it makes sense to me. That's good. I think I'll tweet that. I think I'll put that on Facebook. Reading a book about what's happening in Europe, that's too much. Too many footnotes. Too many footnotes. And the secular worldview, marches on. And it destroys. It takes away life and liberty. It takes away the foundation upon which a society can grow and thrive. And notice, I haven't even said what we as Christians know. No society that sets its face in rebellion against God can ever ask for his blessing. I haven't even had to go there, because you know that. You as a believer already know that. You know this kind of worldview must bring the judgment of God, and frequently is itself the judgment of God upon a society that has had much light, much blessing, and yet this is what we've done with it. We've taken the blessings of God and we've perverted them into a license for our own sin. The thing to take away from here, you must understand, you must communicate this to your children. You must communicate this first to yourself, then to your wife, to your husband, to the people around you in your church, but most importantly, to your children. The secular worldview is not neutral. There is no neutrality when it comes to world views. And the world cannot be neutral about the claims of Jesus Christ. They will either reject them and express hatred toward those who bow the knee, or they will embrace. The secular world has no intention of bowing the knee, but the secular world has every intention of forcing you to bow the knee to its authority and to its dogmas. One of those dogmas is homosexuality is good. Abortion is good. We know that neither one of those things are good. They are part of the culture of death. That homosexuality brings death. Spiritual death, death to society, and death to the individual. The lifespan of the average practicing homosexual is significantly shorter than that of the heterosexual. There's a reason for that. So take that, keep that, remember that, communicate that to your children and to your grandchildren while you still have the freedom to do so, while you can still do so without having to lower your voice. Without having to turn the TV up so it drowns out what you're saying. Do it now. You don't want to be one of those people going, oh, I wish I had communicated that, but I had other things to do. I was so busy. Communicate it now, folks. Make a commitment. I hadn't intended to go quite that long, but I did. And I do not apologize for that. I think it's extremely important. And it is, as I sit here, it is amazing that now twice I have spent time on the dividing line to respond to blog articles that are absolutely infantile in their production. There is absolutely nothing to them as far as writing or literature is concerned. And yet, if we don't respond to that, it's just such a commentary on where we are in our society today. It is such a commentary. It's truly amazing that what has happened that young people would be impressed by that kind of a presentation. That is, to be honest with you, that kind of presentation is an insult to the intellect of any person who is a self-respecting human being and who would want to have meaningful argumentation presented. It's an insult. But that's what's going on out there. There is a lot of insulting material. And seemingly, it is highly effective. I almost started giving the phone number there, and then I realized we really can't do that yet. But we do have good news today. It'll ship Friday. It should be here Friday. Our phone system comes back, and thankfully, it was, well, what it normally is, especially here in Arizona. It was the power supply. And we sort of knew that. And we probably could have fixed it ourselves, huh?
Yep, they didn't want to send that part to us.
Yeah,
that's do that. However, if we do, I know you were saying we can't do a Thursday DL, but if we do a late Friday DL, I might be able to have that in place, and you could do a Skype call-in open phones scenario.
Well, I'm going to be
tentatively.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because we will not have a DL on Thursday. I will be in Colorado. But on Friday, Lord willing, and I have survived being in Colorado for those number of days and haven't ridden off of a cliff somewhere, because that's one of the things I'm doing in Colorado, or had someone come along and push me off of that cliff. Yes. That's why I'm not going to mention where I'm going to be on a two-wheeled vehicle in Colorado. If I survive what I'm doing, on Friday, we will be doing a dividing line. Now, I know that I'll be at Flatirons Baptist Church. I put this on the blog. And I won't be talking about this subject because up in Boulder, that could really get you a lot of protesters. But I'll be talking about Islam. Yes?
No, I was going to say, isn't Boulder like a suburb of San Francisco or something?
Just about, yes. Yeah. Yes. But I will be talking about Islam. And over three nights, Wednesday night, Thursday night, and Friday night. And I did confirm today that those start at 6:45 p.m., which is an interesting time, but 6:45 p.m. So, yeah, it depends on how late. And they're an hour ahead, so we might have a little more buffer there. So, basically, the secular humanist has now decided to start sending me profane stuff. Isn't that nice? So block and report spam. Thank you very much for demonstrating your utter lack of intelligence and maturity there, sir. That's what happens. They can't respond rationally. They can't respond to you in any other way than that. I mean, that's the essence of these folks. No capacity to engage intellectually, so you just act like a child. But anyway, so just keep an eye on the blog. What we'll do, hopefully by Thursday, I'll put a notice up that will give you an idea of exactly when we will be doing the dividing line on Friday, and we may be able to have interaction. That'd be great because I'll be on via Skype, so it'd be really nice if it were to arrive. And depending on how it's being shipped, we'll see. And it should be a pretty straight shot, straight back in. Not a whole lot of setup, I would hope. Yeah, should be there. So we'll see what happens on Friday. We'll try to let you know. And that would be helpful for me because I'll be on Skype. But we've done Skype programs without phones. I did that from Flagstaff a few weeks ago, and we something tells me something will have happened. And even then, I'm pretty certain I have at least this sound file of the Knox debate, and that's pretty high quality. And you had said that when we played, it was the president had just come out in favor of gay marriage. And when I played the audio from that, you said it sounded just fine. So we might be able to continue that. We'll see what happens on Thursday, but I'm sorry, I'll announce on Thursday, on Friday when we get together for the next dividing line, and then next week should be regular schedule as far as I can tell. So thanks for listening today, and remember, what's the takeaway today? Secularism is not neutral, cannot be neutral. Don't accept that myth. That myth is absolutely silencing so many Christians. You need to stand against it. Pray for our country, pray for Western culture, pray for our witness and our faithfulness at this time. We'll see you in the next dividing line. God bless.
Dividing Line has been brought to you by Alpha and Omega Ministries. If you'd like to contact us, call us at 602-973-4602 or write us at P.O. Box 37106, Phoenix, Arizona 85069. You can also find us on the World Wide Web at aomin.org. That's aomin.org, where you'll find a complete listing of James White's books, tapes, debates, and tracks. Join us again this Thursday afternoon at 4 p.m. for The Dividing Line.